President Johnson says the United States can afford to fight the war in Vietnam and build the Great Society at home at the same time. Is he right or wrong? The subject on this week's Capitol Cloakroom.
From the nation's capital, CBS Radio brings you the 943rd presentation of Capitol Cloakroom. This week's guests are Senator Roman L. Ruska, Republican of Nebraska, and Senator Vance Hartke, Democrat of Indiana. Now here is CBS News White House correspondent Dan Rather.
President Johnson this week sent Congress a record budget calling for $172.4 billion in government spending. About one-seventh of the proposed budget, $22 billion, is allocated to the Vietnam War, and approximately one-eighth, $18 billion, is earmarked for various Great Society projects, including the War on Poverty. The President's budget outline includes a 6% surcharge on everyone's income taxes, an increase in Social Security taxes, and increased postal rates. Senator Vance Hartke of Indiana, you represent the majority party, so we'll begin with you, and the question American taxpayers are asking, is this very large budget really necessary?
I think that there's no question about it, that the budget itself and the size of the budget is probably necessary if we're going to continue to make it the United States of America the type of nation which it should be. I think we have a very serious question as to priorities. I think that we have made a big mistake here, that we have assigned a lot of money to destroying not alone the material wealth of the world through military purposes, but destroying the resources of America by either omission and failure to do something in the fields of education and pollution, things of that sort. And at the same time, we're using our natural resources, our human resources, and our natural resources for our destructive purposes rather than constructive purposes.
Senator Ruska, is this very large budget really necessary?
No, I don't believe it is necessary. I think there's latitude for its being cut, and I would say substantially cut. On the order of the cut, we're going to have to defer to a closer analysis of each of the programs. I think we can start out with saying that the appropriation for war needs will be received with a great deal of respect. We have spent some time already in hearings on that subject in appropriations with Secretary McNamara and General Wheeling. On the other hand, we have many programs which have been not only untried, many of them have been greatly unsuccessful, and especially in the Great Society category and the poverty and education category. And it's not a matter of starving people to finance the war or keep the budget down. It's a matter of streamlining, making more efficient, more hard-hitting the programs that are aimed in that direction. I think there's ample room for cuts, and we're going to scrutinize the budget very carefully, but chapter by chapter.
I think
see that
will.
That gets done.
Now, Senator Ruska, I think there's no question that there will be cuts made by the Congress. I voted for over $5 billion in cuts last year. This is not unusual in the Congress, you know. The honest appraisal of the budget means necessarily that you would cut back. I would hope that we might add some in some areas, hopefully for the benefit of our people. For example, this military budget has taken off like a misguided missile. We've gone on up and up and up, and we're now going at the rate that we're spending on that war, $787 every single second. In other words, as fast as you can say 787, you're spending that much money on that war. Now, I agree that we probably are going to give them that money, but the priority and the question of social needs of a nation certainly determine that we should go ahead and give a real thorough examination to that policy which is spending that much money. In other words...
Well, now, Brother Hartke, you can have it both ways. You started this broadcast out by saying you believe all the money in the budget is necessary, and now you affirm that you are going to see that the budget's going to be cut, you're going to vote for cuts, and there will be a reduction of the budget. Now, which of those do you choose?
Well, I
can't have both.
Oh, certainly you can't have both. You see, this is a very, you see, that's a word play with words when you talk about you can't have both. I'm in favor of doing things which are necessary, and I'm opposed to doing those things which are unnecessary. I do not believe, for example, that we need to go ahead with the poverty program the way it's being administered.
Well, that's good.
But, you know, we're on probably on the same side. But I do believe also that whenever we cut, for example, as we have this year, the education budget from a place in where it was $3.3 billion down to $2.8 billion this year, that what we are doing is shortchanging the American youth.
Well, that statement is made on the assumption that the $3.3 was used effectively, economically, and in a hard-hitting, clean-cut way that produced results. And I think it can be demonstrated in some of the areas that that is not necessarily true. Now, if it isn't, then the cut would be in keeping with the philosophy you've expressed, that where cuts should be made, they should be made.
Well, now, we could go back and probably find that there is a lot of places, not alone in government, where things have been done which shouldn't have been done, but the point still remains that we are going to spend in the supplemental budget this year alone. In the supplemental budget, that's the extra amount that we're asking for this war effort, more than four times the amount of money that's being spent on education. Now, there's a lot of waste in the military. There's a lot of waste over there. Tell you the truth, one of the people who just returned from Vietnam told me that it was like Santa Claus being there every day for the Vietnamese people. And the question was asked, well, how long is this going to go on? He said, well, until every one of those people in South Vietnam has a Jeep, a Honda, and a transistor radio. Now, I'm interested in having a real good examination of that type of expenditure when we see people here at home who are denied an opportunity to go to college. And I think that we ought to go ahead and work out a program where every single qualified young man and girl ought to have an opportunity to go to college, and
wonderful.
There shouldn't be
That's begging the question, though, Mr. Hartkid, because, you see, we've been at this for a little while now, and we haven't witnessed those results, have we? And those who are complaining about it are those who are supposed to be the recipients of this thing. Oh, but getting back to your idea of the relative degree of expenditure for education and for Vietnam, heavens, in education, however, you're spending more than 2,600 times than we are for research on soybeans. Well, now, if you're going to put the degree of expenditures on any item in relation to something that is a grand total of many hundreds and thousands of items, we're not going to get very far in this discussion, are we?
Oh, I would think so. I think this is the very heart of what we need to discuss in this country.
We'll take a percentage of the war cost and apply it to education.
Most certainly, in every place. We're going to have to make a very clear distinction as to what comes first, a system of priorities. In other words, are we going to say that education has to come behind going to the moon? Are we going to say that education comes behind developing a supersonic transport plane? Now, we're going to spend, as I recall, about $5 billion on going to the moon, and yet we're not going to spend but about $1 billion on trying to make it possible for people to live in
the
cities better.
Again, you're begging the question. It's not a question of whether we're putting $5 billion to go to the moon ahead of education. What you are saying, you'd like to increase the amount for the expenditure for education. Now, whether that amount gets more results in education or not, that's another question.
It may be another question, but you're exactly right when you say I want to spend more for education, because I do. I want to spend more because I think it needs to be done. I think we need to have a cooperative education program, which would not cost much money, but would make it possible for every boy and girl who wants to go into a work-study program while he's working and studying and earning. You could have a cooperative education program.
That's wonderful.
Last year, I was successful in having the adult education program passed. I think it is a good first step, but we need money to provide an opportunity for these people who did not finish high school, who would like to finish high school now, but are denied that opportunity.
That's wonderful. All these things are wonderful. But you see, just in the last 10 days, one of the daily journals of this nation's capital had a series of analyses having to do with various portions of this great society program, the poverty program, the education program, all of them. And had anyone reading those reports, and I think they were fairly objective, I think they were fairly accurate in the trying to describe the nature of the progress of these programs. No one can help but be impressed, especially if you have reading and material other than that, with the idea that a label doesn't make a program. A label doesn't make a program effective, nor does a large amount of money thrown at a label and stirred around by a lot of high-salaried people who are not getting the intended benefits of that program to the intended recipients. Then I say that we are in an awful mess when we say the way to handle this is to give more money.
Well, it's very
That's simply what you're saying.
No, it's not simply what I'm saying. We're just in 100% disagreement. Outside of that, I think there's nothing wrong.
Senators, if I may interject into this, the question of the tax increase that the president has requested, this 6% surcharge on income taxes, is there any doubt in your mind, Senator Rusker, that this is going to get through?
Well, I wouldn't say that it's going to have easy sailing, because I think one of the things we're going to have to find out is how much we can reduce the total of the appropriated funds. Now, I don't know, of course, what the deficit is. You see, we're kind of obfuscated. We don't know. There are a couple of newspapers were printed here in Washington in the last 12 hours. One of them says Johnson submits a $169 billion budget with a deficit of $2 billion. The one that was published last night said that Johnson's budget is $135 billion, and that's a $34 billion difference. And the deficit under that is $8 billion. Now, it depends how much are we going to be able to reduce one or the other of these budgets, and therefore reduce one or the other of these deficits. And if there will be a reduction, a substantial reduction, which will take the starch out of that $5 billion 6% surplus tax, then there won't be any need for the tax.
But you're not prepared to say categorically that you're against that surcharge.
I would say this. It will depend upon the success that we have in paring down the requested appropriations.
Senator Hartke?
I think this demonstrates a difference of opinion between Senator Rusk and myself very conclusively. In the first place, both of these newspapers are right. One of them is talking about the National Income Accounts Budget. The other is talking about the administrative budget. These are both well-defined economic terms, well-known by everyone in the government, and the people who study governmental financing understand exactly what they're talking about. There is no confusion here. I'm not saying anything about the amounts, but you're talking about two different items. One of them is like talking about an orange, the other is like talking about an apple.
Why the shift this year from one to the other?
Well, no question of shift. President Eisenhower advised that the whole administrative budget approach was the wrong way to look at things. This is the way we've been doing for years.
But he continued to use it.
Oh, but he didn't. He said it'd be very much better for the American people if they went back to a national income accounts budget, which is part of the things which is submitted here.
Would it be just a coincidence that if President Johnson had used the administrative budget basis, that the deficit would be $8 billion, whereas if he used the national income account thing, the deficit would have been only $2 billion. Is that just coincidental that that happened in the year that he made the change?
Oh, no. This is not true, and this is not the year the change was made.
This is the year the change was made, my friend. There isn't any question about it, and the president so said in his message. No. This is the first time he has used that as a basis for computing the deficit.
Senators, I think we should explain here that the discussion concerns the difference between some who say the budget this year is $172.4 billion, which is the cash budget, the so-called cash budget, and those who say this year's budget is $135 billion, which is the so-called administrative budget.
That's right.
And there is still a third budget figure, which is the national accounts budget, which that figure is $169 billion plus.
69.2.
So the discussion here is about those three different kinds of budgets.
Let's come back basically to this question of whether or not you need the surtax. I think this is what the American people are interested in. Are you going to be faced with an increase in taxes? I do not think we should be. I'm opposed to the tax increase for the very simple reason that it is the wrong type of approach. It's the wrong medicine for a illness which we have at the present time. Unless there is one unless I would like to put in there, that is, unless we have been denied the opportunity to have a full and complete estimate of the cost of that war in Vietnam. And that is possible, that we have been denied that opportunity. But otherwise, what we need is an expanding economy. The tight money, high interest rate policy, which is being pursued at the present time, put on us by the Federal Reserve Board, has cut back on the expansion of this economy. Automobile sales are down. The building of new homes is down. Those people are not making money. Those people are not earning wages. Now, you do not have taxes paid on just income. You have taxes paid upon profits for a corporation and upon income from individuals. I believe that what we should do is expand the economy. I think if we do this, if we get rid of the tight money, get rid of the high interest rate policy, and put this nation back on the program which we had followed for the period from 1961 till roughly 1965, that we will not need a tax increase. But if we put the tax increase on, in my opinion, now, I think you'll not even receive any additional revenue, let alone.
Of course, if that's done without reference to paying some attention to expenditures, there's another statistic which is very important to every citizen in the United States, and that is the consumer's price index and the buying power of the dollar. And in that period of 1961 to 1965 and to the present time, we have had a steady and substantial deterioration of the buying power of the dollar. If the course which you outline will continue to see that factor increase, then much of the talk about an advancing economy doesn't mean a doggone thing. Because it depends what can you buy, not only with the wages you get from week to week, but with the monies you have saved or that you get in a pension or Social Security or anything else. And there has been no assurance that there will not, that there will be a cessation of that increase of the consumer's price index if we pursue the course that you describe.
Well, now let's put the horse where it belongs. Let's put it right in front of the cart. The point of it is that war in Vietnam has been the cause of most of that increase.
I just
point to you that from 1961 until the escalation of the war, there was a relatively stable price level in the United States. Now, they can argue all they want to the contrary. The big increase in federal expenditures has been in the military end. There has been no substantial increase in the other part of the government as far as finance. I'm very clear in my mind that there are certain items which probably can be cut in this budget, but I'm also equally clear that if we're going to deny to our untrained and unskilled labor the opportunity to be trained and to update their skills, if we're going to deny to our uneducated people the opportunity for a decent education, if we're going to deny to our cities the right to clean up the air and to clean up the water, we're going to pay the penalty. And that penalty is going to be a serious one.
And if we're going to deny to those people who make this tremendous gross national product possible, the opportunity and the ability, the capacity to continue to make that country grow and that economy grow, then the ones in need of education, the ones in need of the relief from poverty and all of these things won't have any granary to which to repair in order to get the stuffs which they need to rescue them from all those things. And it is not true that there has been a relatively stable situation from 1960 on. Here the consumer's price index in 1960 was 103. 3 years later it was 108. Now, that's a big figure. It is now 114.
Oh, let's be quite honest about it, Willis. You had a growth rate there in population alone, which account for 3% of that increase, and didn't even keep up. Productivity. Productivity increased, too. Now, you can't deny that.
Consumption, yes, but not prices. How does prices reflect themselves in increased population?
Now, Senator Ruska, I know of no Democratic, Republican, or independent economist who makes any claim except for this one simple fact that prices level was relatively stable from 1961 to 1965. Now, some Republican politicians have argued to the contrary, but no economist that I know of, none of them has said to the contrary.
All I have to resort to are the figures that I've given you, which I've drawn from the bureaus that are under Democratic administration. Now, I'm sure they're nonpartisan in compiling statistics, but when it jumps from 104 to 109, then from 109 to 114, you can have respectable or non-committal Republican or Democrat politicians or non-politicians, those figures have to stand. Just have to stand.
Well, I don't want to leave those unchallenged. Fact of it is, you check the wages they've gone up to, you check the profits they've gone up to, and up more than that. Now, let's come on back to the heart of the difference, I think, between what we're talking about, and that is whether we're going to go ahead and just say that the United States has reached its zenith, that we have reached the height of where we can go, that we no longer can business and government go into a partnership for a greater expansion of this country, that we're going to have to go ahead and fight a miserable war over in Vietnam and take all of our energy for that, but the people at home are going to pay for it in less education, in less, in more dirty water, in more dirty streets, in more dirty air.
You put it in a fashion which begs the question, and you know that it does.
I didn't beg any question.
Why, of course you are. You are saying that all we want in the budget, those of us who want to scrutinize it carefully and take out ill-advised, improper, and irrational expenditures, you put us in the position of saying we don't want any expenditures for that, which is not true, and I've served on the appropriations committee for 10 years here and a couple years in the House, so I've gone through that question of priorities many, many times, and we're preparing and doing it right now. But it is not true that we want to shut off education and that we want to starve the poor people and that we don't want wage increases and so on. That is not true. And as far as the war is concerned, of course, that is something that is in the category of the first duty of any nation. The first duty of any nation is to survive.
And if there must be a choice between certain low-priority items, as opposed to seeing that the war is properly equipped and properly financed, everyone in America should not have any difficulty in solving that one.
I understand what you're saying. You're saying, in other words, that we can spend 70 times as much to kill people as we can to save people.
No, I'm saying this, however. When the president cuts out highway construction funds and then increases highway beautification funds, then I say we have a highly distorted sense of priorities. And that's what the fact is. That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the Job Corps centers, where we spend $8,000 to $9,000 for a copy of each of the inhabitants thereof. And when we get through, nobody knows what we have. And there are better ways than that to approach the problem and to solve it. And that's what we have to get at, and not talk in terms of trying to help these poor, beleaguered people. Everybody feels the poor ought to be helped. But when we use silly things like this to try to get the job done, then I say it's time for the common sense of the American people to assert itself through their elected representative. And that is precisely what happened on November 8th last year.
Now, I'm not in favor of that cutback on highways any more than any reasonable person ought to be. But let me ask you a question. I'm not defending the president. Let's make this very clear. I'm not defending the president. I'm not even defending the great society. All I'm saying to you is a very simple thing. And I want to ask you a simple question. Are you in favor of providing additional funds for adult education for those people who were denied through economics or circumstances an opportunity to finish high school? Will you vote for more money to provide for adult education?
If more money can be effectively used for that purpose and get proportionately beneficial results, yes.
Would you vote for cooperative education, which would provide for a system where you could go ahead and has work programs and study programs where they could earn while they go?
I would vote for any of these things that are arranged on an order of priority and within our fiscal capabilities, because the pit is not bottomless, and not all of these have the same rating. Now, would you vote for a budget that would shorten the supply of helicopters in Vietnam? Adult education funds.
Let's put it that way. I'll show you. I will vote for every penny the boys need in Vietnam. Every penny. But let me make it equally clear that that does not endorse that foolish policy which keeps us there, which is an endless round of expending of money, expending of lives, and getting no place. We're being hated. We have no allies. We have no support in the rest of the world.
Now we're getting into foreign relations.
Well, I'd be glad to talk about foreign relations because
I would too, except our host here wouldn't be very happy.
Well, gentlemen, if I may, in the brief time that we have left, I'd like to get back to one point that I think both of you made earlier. Is it your judgment that, Senator Huska, that the president has deliberately tried to mislead us with this budget?
I think he has in many respects, yes.
Senator Arkey, do you agree with that?
I think he actively misleading propositions are advanced in his message and in the texture of the figures that are reflected in the budget.
I would hope not, and I honestly believe that it's wrong to say that any person in the government is going to try to mislead the Congress. I think that the heart of difficulty for me is that we are willing to spend so much money on a miserable war in Vietnam, and yet we're willing to deny our people a right to a decent education. We're willing to deny the right to
people. Who is willing to do that? Mr. Hartke, you see, that's
well,
not...
I think you are.
I am not willing, and I have made my position very clear. And I don't want to be cast into the position of a rogue who would like to stick their head in the water and hold it there so that we won't have so many mouths to feed. And I resent very much being placed in that category.
Senators, I'm very sorry, but our time is up. Thank you very much for being with us on Capitol Cloakroom.
You have been listening to the 943rd meeting in Capitol Cloakroom. This week's guests were Senator Roman L. Huska, Republican of Nebraska, and Senator Vance Hartke, Democrat of Indiana. CBS News White House correspondent Dan Rather was the moderator. Produced by Ellen Wadley and Prentice Childs, Capitol Cloakroom originates in Washington, D.C. Capitol Cloakroom is a recorded production of CBS News.